Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Mem Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Mem Hei. If you prefer, you can see on the 3rd wide line of the Gemara. You'll notice on that line a house shape on the side of the Gemara under the Nosei / Mivneh heading, the Nosei being the topic and Mivneh structural note, which we've combined into one note. A house appears and it represents Maisim Shebohem Ho'eved Borach Me'adonoi. There are a couple of cases here, stories where a slave escaped, ran from his master. Case 1, Mechutz Loretz Loretz Israel, from outside Israel to the land of Israel. And the second story, Mimokum Echod Bechutz Loretz L'Sheni, from one place in the Chutz Loretz to a second place. It goes without saying that today's shiur is a continuation of ideas that we saw in our previous shiur, so if you're a first-time listener, by all means, you should be familiar with the material from our previous shiur. The Gemara. Hahu avda, there was a slave, the orak. Orak is to run away, to escape, mechutza loretz, loretz, from outside Israel to Israel, ozal morei abasrei. The more its master, the slave's master, followed the slave. So the slave's master is running also to Eretz Yisrael to pursue his slave. Also, lekameh d'Rabbi Ami, the master came to Rabbi Ami, who was in Eretz Yisrael. Amalei, so Rabbi Ami said, listen, I understand your slave has run to Eretz Yisrael, and you know that means that he can very well decide to stay here. He's not going to go back to you. You're going to be out a slave. So, Nichtoiv Loch Shtora Adome, we'll have a contract, a document indicating an IOU for his value, so that the value of the slave will be paid to you. V'kosuv le gita dechirusa. And you, in turn, will write a freedom document, freeing the slave. Because as we've already learned, that a slave who runs from Chutz Loretz to Eretz Yisrael, he is entitled to his freedom, because he is entitled to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Ve'ilo, and if you don't cooperate, mefakno le minoch, we're going to simply take him away from you. Take note, by the way, that we've just begun a long point. So the Gemara continues. Rav Ami tells the master, if not, then we're just going to take him away from you, Mida Rebbe Achi Rav Yoshia, based on the teaching of Rav Achi Rav Yoshia. It takes quite a few lines of Gemara in order for us to finally reach where Rav Achi comes into the picture. You can see we've underlined his name a number of lines later. That's where it comes to a head. So the master of the slave is informed that if you don't cooperate, accept an IOU for his value, and you write him a freedom document, you're simply going to lose your slave, based on Rav Achi's teaching. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source. It opens with a pasuk dealing with the 7 nations that dwelled in Israel before the Jewish people entered. And it says, Lo yeshvu ba'artzecha, pen yachtiu oischali. Those 7 nations are not to continue dwelling in Israel after the Jews entered. the pasuk saying their presence could serve to influence you to sin. So they're not to remain in the land. Yochol ba'ovid kichavim shekibel olav shelo la'avid avidus kichavim kosev medaber. Could this pasuk possibly refer to Gentiles that accepted on themselves not to engage in idol worship? Talmud lomar lo saskir eved el adonov ashinotze lecho me'im adonov. Now we take a look at the Rashi. Dibur hamaschio el adonov. A couple lines up from here in the Rashi, he says, "Al totziuhu mi beinechem lashiva lavodis kachovim shelo." Don't remove him from your midst to send him back to his idolatry. So that we see that if you have a Gentile that accepted to abandon idolatry, he can remain in your midst. My takonosai, the Gemara goes on. The Pasuk says, this is now a quote from Pasuk Yud Zayin, we had just quoted Pasuk Tez Zayin, it goes on to say, Imcho yeshev bekir b'cho, he shall dwell in your midst. V'kashya lei l'Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia, in looking at this Pasuk, had difficulty. Hai me'im adonov, the expression of in the Pasuk was me'im adonov. It should have read, me'im elohov miboyalei. The Pasuk, if according to the context, do not return the servant to his master, who, according to our the context we said is who's trying to avoid or abandon idol worship, there should be a reference to idolatry in the Pasuk, but there isn't. Ela Omar Rabbi Yoshia. So here we have a second pshat in the Pasuk. Do you see the diamond, the number 2, and on the side of the Gemara you notice there's a triangle which we already encountered. The triangle represents Droshus al HaPosuk Lo Saskir, and the numbers 1 through 3 are Shlovim B'Havonas Mashmos HaPosuk, stages in trying to understand the Posuk. So Rav Yoshia says the language of the Posuk does not seem to relate to a Gentile who accepted upon himself to abandon idolatry. So rather, Rabbi Yoshia says, "B'moicher avdo l'chutzo l'oretz hakosuf medaber." The pasuk is speaking about a person who lives in Israel who sold his slave to chutzlaretz, to a place outside Israel, and the pasuk is a warning to the Beis Din that if such a sale took place, the slave shall not be given to the purchaser, but he goes free. That, of course, is a result of the Eved being sent out of Israel, which the owner doesn't have a right to do. V'kashyolei l'Rav Achi, Rabbi Yoshia. And Rav Achi, the son of Rabbi Yoshia, had difficulty with that pshat. Hi. Asher yinotzel eilecha, the pasuk said that, according to Rav Yoshia's pshat, asher yinotzel me'imoch miboyalei. The language should have read thusly, but it doesn't say that. Rashi says, me'imoch miboyalei, across from here in the Rashi, asher yisporesh, he who separates me'imoch from you, min eretz Yisrael, from the land of Israel, tzil l'chutzlaretz, sending him outside, kamo asher yatzil kim me'avinu. So, being that the pasuk doesn't say that, Rav Achi comes up with his own pshat. Elo amar Rav Achi Rabbi Yoshia, be'eved sheborach mechutzlaretz lo oretz hakosuf medaber. The word in the pasuk was eilecha, unto you. Where do Jews dwell? In the land of Israel. So it's talking about a servant, a slave, that ran from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael. And the Pasuk is saying that you do not return him to the owner. And that's what we saw at the beginning of this long point, where Rav Ami told that Chutz Laretz slave owner, either you cooperate with us or you're going to lose your slave. You're going to lose everything. At least if you cooperate with us, you'll get an IOU toward his value. You will, and in exchange, you'll send him free and you won't experience a total loss. Tanya Idoch. And here we have a reference to the Pasuk. That's why you see a triangle. A different take on it. Lo saskir evet al adonov. Rebbe Omer, Belokech Evid Almanas, the Shachra Kos Medaber. Rebbe says this pasuk is talking about someone who purchases a slave, stipulating that he's buying the slave in order to set him free. Hechi Domi, how is that to be understood? Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, the Kosav Lehochi, the purchaser, writes as follows. When I buy you, you will be your own boss from right now. In other words, a statement of freedom. Rav Chisda, Orak Le Avdo Lebe Kusoi. Rav Chisda, who was in Chutz Laretz, had a slave that ran to Be Kusoi, a place in Chutz Laretz. Sholach Lehu, he sent a message, Hadrua Nihali. By the way, the double underline highlights the place, Beit Kusoi. You'll see there are two stories involving that particular location, hence we saw fit to highlight the name of the place. So Rav Chisda's slave ran to Beit Kusoi, and he sent a message, I want you to send him back to me. Sholchule, the Pasuk says, Lo saskir evet al adonav. One is not to return a slave to his master. We're skipping the printer's parentheses section. Sholach lehu, hahu, be'eved, sheborach, mechutzor, tzaretz, uchlerachi, rebioshia. That Pasuk has nothing to do with my slave. That Pasuk has to do with a slave that ran from Chutz La'aretz, from outside Israel, to the land of Israel. He is not to be returned to Chutz La'aretz. In accordance with Rav Achi's teaching, and I'm sure everyone remembers that we just a couple minutes ago we dealt with him, but if you have trouble finding that, note the star to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can see above where he appeared. Umay shna de sholach lehu kiderabachi Reb Yoshia. Why did Rav Chisda send that pshat in the pasuk when they tried to justify their resistance to returning the slave? So they cited the pasuk lo saskir. Rav Chisda cited an alternative meaning, in other words, deflecting their claim of resistance. And he decided to deflect their claim based on Rav Achi's approach to the Pasuk. There was a second triangle we saw above, a second approach to that Pasuk. Why didn't Rav Chisda cite Rebbe's approach, like you saw in the second triangle, Rebbe's approach to that Pasuk, which would also have been a way to deflect their claim of resistance to return the slave? So the Gemara answers, Mishum demashma lehu kroi. The simpler meaning of the Pasuk is in accordance with Rav Achi's approach, more so than Rebbe's approach. The people in the Beit Kusoi were people who did not have much trust or respect for Drushas Chazal, for the oral tradition. So that if Rav Chisda is going to try to deflect their approach to the Pasuk with an alternative approach, it would have to be an approach that appeals more to them. So therefore he cited Rav Achi's approach. We continue in the Gemara. Abaye Irkis Le Chamra Bekusoi. Abaye lost a donkey in that place. Sholach lehu, he sent a message, Shavuali, send me back my donkey. Sholchu le, shlach simona. So if you claim it to be your donkey, then send a sign indicating that the donkey that's lost is yours. Sholach lehu de chivro krese. So Abaye said, well, it has a white underside, a white belly. Sholchu le, they sent back to him, to Abaye, ilav de nachmeni at, if you weren't the great and pious Abaye, nachmeni is an alternative name for Abaye. If you weren't the very pious Nachmeni that we know to be a great righteous man, lo have meshadarno leini haloch, we wouldn't send the donkey to you. Is it not so that in fact all donkeys, or certainly many donkeys, have white bellies, white undersides? In other words, the sign that you sent isn't a very convincing sign that it's your donkey that was lost. But since there is a lost donkey and you're the one putting a claim in for it, we'll send it to you because we trust you. The Mishnah. Ein poidim es hashvuyin yeser al kidei demayin mipnei tikun olam. One is not to redeem captives, pay ransom money, more than their value. V'ein mavrichin es hashvuyin mipnei tikun olam. If there are captives, so one should not attempt to rescue them, because that could result in a greater tragedy, a greater loss. So it's mipnei tikun olam, for the public benefit, for public welfare. We don't mavriach is to enable them to escape. The point being then that if you have chas v'sholom, this unfortunate situation of people taken captive, the only way to deal with it is pay the ransom, assuming that the ransom corresponds to their value. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer b'mnei takonas hashvuyin, for the benefit of captives. He's what he means will be explained in the Gemara. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei topic heading. Ma tam ein poidim es hashvuyin yeser al kidei demayin. Why are we taught not to redeem captives for more than their value? Ibayalo hai mipnei tikun olam. The Mishnah that says not to redeem them for more than their value, is it aleph oy dilma beis? Notice the Gemara structure, two sides of the analysis. Mishum doichaga detziburuhu, is it because that it could, that would create a great financial strain on the community, and there is no mitzvah, there's no command to subject the community to impoverishment because someone was taken captive. Oy dilma, the Gemara goes on to say, or maybe mishum delog ligrivu v'laisu tfei. So as not to create an incentive for the goyim, for the Gentiles, to take more Jews, to continue, after seeing that they can be enriched through it, if we would be paying more than their value. The Rashi says, Oy dilma, delo yimsuru oyvde kechavim nafshayu v'ligvu v'laisu tvei. If we would be paying more than the value of the captives, so the goyim would extend themselves, yimsru nafshayos, they would put themselves out, they would extend themselves, they would risk their own welfare, their own lives to get captives, mitnei shemoichrin oison biyoger, because after all they can sell them for a high price. V'nafkamina, the difference between pshat A and aleph and pshat beis is im yesh lo av oshir akarayv. If the captive has a wealthy father or relative, shereitzeliv doisei b'domim harbe, then wants to pay a lot of money, v'lo yapileu alatzibur, and the ransom isn't going to be charged to the community. So if you say the first pshat aleph, So then we would not object to paying more than the value. If the pshat, the explanation of Tikkun Olam, is based on Beis, so even though his father is willing to pay a lot of money, we will not allow it, because that will serve as an incentive to them to capture more captives in the future. So the Gemara continues. Toshma, the Levi Bar Darga, that's an individual, Parka Labarte, he redeemed his daughter, Betleser Alfi Dinri Zov. He, for Tlesar, is 13,000 pieces of gold. And for the time being, we're going to assume that, well, if he did it, then it must have been okay, so that the whole objection of the Mishnah is based on Dochak Ditzibura, and here there was no Dochak Ditzibura, there was no pressure on the community or any threat of impoverishment. The Gemara rejects this. Notice this is you'll see a classic rejection. It says, Omar Abaye. Abaye said, Uman le malon de barotzen chachomim ovad. Who says that Levi Bar Darga behaved in accordance with rabbinic will? Dilma shelo barotzen chachomim ovad. Maybe he acted against the rabbinic will. So that you can't bring proof from the fact that Levi Bar Darga paid a lot of money for his daughter. He didn't necessarily receive the stamp of approval, so you can't prove from that story that a person of great wealth would be allowed to redeem for more than the value of the captive. V'ein mavrichin es hashvuyin mipnei tikkun ha'olam Rav Shmuel Omer mipnei takonas shvuyin. My binaya, what is the difference between explaining the prohibition of enabling a captive to escape based on Tikkun Olam versus Tikkun Shvuyim for the benefit of the captives? So Iko Binayu, the point of difference will be the Leika Elo Chad, where there is only one captive, and that sole captive, that individual captive, is the one you are going to mavriach, enable to escape. Rashi elaborates, the leka elo chad shavui, there's only one captive. Tanakamo chayish l'tikun olam kulo. Tanakamo is concerned with a world consideration. Shema yiktsefu al hashvuyim wasidim lovo v'yitnum b'shalshos v'b'charitzin. If the captives see a successful escape of a Jewish captive in any particular location, so world over, that will enrage them, and next time they take captives, they're going to subject them to harsh treatment, to chain them and subject them to other trials and tribulations. For Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, Lo Chayish, he is not concerned with problems arising. Elohim ken yeshvim achem imo. Only if there are other captives with the one that you are enabling to escape. Shema yitzifu ha shaboyen liyasran bisurin. In a case like that, so everything is immediate. It's focused so that the captors will oppress the remaining captives that were with the one that you enabled to escape. But if he's alone, so Reb Shimon says there's nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about what the captors somewhere else in the world will think in the future because of what we're doing now. We continue in the Gemara. There is a long marking. Notice it's called a Maisa. It's a long story. Binsei the Rav Nachman, the daughters of Rav Nachman, Bochashon Kidro Biodayu, they were seen stirring a hot pot, a cauldron, a boiling cauldron, with their bare arms. They would roll up their sleeves and put their arms into a boiling pot and stir it. Someone who would see this could think that these daughters must be tremendously righteous individuals, so much so that the fire and heat have no effect on them. Kashya lay l'Rav Ilish. Rav Ilish had difficulty with that. Why? Ksiv, the pasuk in Kehelet says, Adam echad me'elef matzasi, v'isha b'chol eile lo matzasi. Here we're going to translate the pasuk. There's much more to say when analyzing verses from the scriptures, but for the sake of, we'll say, the simplistic explanation, which enables us to continue in the Gemara, Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of men, says, amongst 1,000 men I find one pious one, and amongst all of those people, even one woman I did not find to be righteous. Well, Ha'ika bin Seyd Rav Nachman, so Rav Ilish says, well, why does the pasuk have such a skeptical attitude toward finding righteous women when you have here the daughters of Rav Nachman, they're stirring boiling pots with their bare arms? Gorma lahu milsa vishtabion vishtaboy ihunami badayu. Things happened, situation caused it such that the daughters of Rav Nachman were taken into captivity, and Rav Ilish along with them. Yuma chad have Yosef gabe hahu gavro da have yoda belishne the tzipori. One day there was a man sitting in captivity together with Rav Ilish, and this man had the unique ability to understand the speech, the communication of birds with one another. He knew bird talk. Also urva, an urva, an orave, type of bird, often translated as a raven, a black bird. The kokori lay and was chirping. Omar lay, Mike Omar, and Rav Ilish asked the man, what's the bird saying? Omar lay, so the man responded, Ilish Barach, Ilish Barach. Ilish escaped. Omar, so Rav Ilish, upon hearing this, said, Urva shikrahu velo misamichno olei. The orev is a bird that will lie, and I'm not going to rely on him. Adohachi, in the meantime, also yoina v'kokaria, a dove came and started chirping. Omar lay, my komra, and Rav Ilish asked the man, what is the yona, the dove, saying? Omar lay, Ilish barach, he's saying, the same thing as the orev said, that Ilish escaped. Omar, Rav Ilish, upon hearing this, said, Knesset Yisrael kiyonu mesila. The community of Israel, the Jewish people, are mesila, like the word moshal or nimshal, are compared to a yona bird. Shma mina misrachish linisa. Since the Jewish people are compared to the yona bird is not a lying bird. And therefore I conclude that a miracle is probably going to happen. And through that I will escape. Omar, Rav Ilish, then anticipating his immediate escape, he said, Ezel Achsi bin Sey de Rav Nachman Ikaimin bin Nesayu Ahadrinu. I'm going to check out the daughters of Rav Nachman to see if they're still maintaining their faithfulness. These were women that were married. The daughters of Rav were married women. And are they still maintaining a decent level of morality and faithfulness to their husbands? After all, a married woman is forbidden to be in intimacy with other men, and here these women are in captivity. Are they still maintaining their faithfulness? Omar, Rav Ilish figured, Noshi komili diis lehu sadron lahadodi bebeis hakisei. Women, when it comes to their womanly conversation, it's common knowledge, a common practice on the part of women to conduct their discussions amongst themselves in the Beis HaKisei, in the bathroom. So he went to where the Beis HaKise was stood on the other side of the door, on the other side of the wall. Shaminu de Ko'amron, and he heard them saying, he heard the daughters of Rav Nachman saying, Ardi Guvrin Unahardoi Guvrin. Ardi means these captives, they're our husbands, and the men we left behind in Nahardo, the name of a Jewish community in Bovel, they're our husbands. You see that they've already developed some type of attachment to their captors. And if you look at, you see Rashi, three lines from the bottom, toward the end of the line, Klomar, Kishem Shehem Hoyu Balenu, just like the men in Nahardo were our husbands, Kach Elu Balenu, so too these are our husbands, Einonu Tzrichim Odlem, we don't need the men back in Nahardo. So the Gemara goes on, Lema lehu leshavu yayu, the lirchekinu mehacha, the lalisu inshin velishami velifrikinon. They were scheming that their captors should distance us from here, so that their husbands in Nahardo don't discover where we are and attempt to redeem us. So Rav Elish revealed that the daughters of Rav Nachman are no longer faithful. Come, Orak. He got up and escaped. Asa iu vahu gavra. Rav Elish and the birdman. L'viday Yisrachish le'nisofar b'mavra. Rav Elish was successful, merited a miracle, and crossed the river. Ovar b'mavra is a point of crossing in the water. You would ordinarily cross a bridge or a ferry, but he successfully crossed the water, and the pursuers weren't able to reach him anymore. And vahu gavra ashkichu v'katlua. The birdman was caught, and was executed. Ki hadron v'asan, Omar havu kobachshon kidra b'kshafim. When the daughters of Rav Nachman came back, so he said that they were stirring the pots with their bare arms through kshafim, through black magic, not through righteousness like he originally was led to believe. And so you see also that his initial skepticism was confirmed as a result of what he saw there in captivity. The Mishnah, the Ein Loichim Sforim Tfilin Mezuzos Mina Oivdik Chovim Yesra Kedei Demehem. Just like we said, by captive people, not to pay more than their value, one does not pay idol worshippers who are selling holy scrolls, tefillin, and mezuzos more than their value. The Gemara continues on Omid Beis, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam. Rashi says at the top, the two considerations that we saw before are possible explanations for this objection to paying idol worshippers for their sale of sefer sforim tefillin mezuzos more than their actual value. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the nosei sefer Torah. Shenimsa Bershus Akum Min V'chule, a sefer Torah that's found in the possession of an idol worshipper, a heretic, etc. Shekosvoi Akum Min V'chule. What about a sefer Torah that was written by one of these people? The Gemara. Omar Le Rav Budya Ravashi. Yeser al kedei demeim hu de'ein lokhin. We can infer from the Mishnah that to pay more than their value, so that we do not do. Ha b'chdei demeim lokhin. but their market value, we will pay them and pay them, buy the Sefer, this Sforim from them. Shma mina, should we conclude Sefer Torah shenimtza biyad oivid kichavim korinbo, that a Sefer Torah found in the possession of an idol worshiper is suitable for using for the Torah reading, and by suggesting that, we're saying then that we're not suspicious, or we're not going to suspect that the idol worshiper himself wrote it with his idol in mind. We call that writing it l'shem avodah zara. If we would suspect that, so then you certainly wouldn't use a holy scroll that was written with idolatrous intent. But it seems from the Mishnah that you can buy from them as long as you pay its market value, and if you're going to buy from them, you're probably going to use it. The Gemara says, no, Dilma lignos. Maybe all the Mishnah is saying, you buy it from them to then bury it, to put it out of circulation, because we do suspect that maybe it was written with idolatrous intent, and you cannot use it. On the other hand, maybe not, and it has holiness. So the way we treat a situation like that is to bury it. Omar Rav Nachman, Naktinon, we have a tradition. Sefer Torah, Shekosvoi, a Sefer Torah that was written by a min, an heretic, Yisorev, shall be burnt. Kosvoi Oivikichovim, if it was written by an idol worshipper, Igonez, is to be buried. Nimtza Biad Min, as in contrast with written, here it's found in the possession of a heretic. So then, we'll say it's a step lower in severity, so there we don't burn it, but we bury it. Nimsa biad oivde kichavim, a sefer Torah found in the possession of an idol worshipper. Amri law yigones v'amri law korinbo. There are two versions. One says bury it, and the other says you can use it for Torah reading. You can; it's acceptable. Rashi has an approach. We'll look at Rashi's approach, but we also want to point out that Tosfos disagrees. So Rashi says, Amri la korinbo. You notice the Rashi right across from here, where there's a star. Desfek sfekohu. There's a double doubt. One, Shema Yisrael kosvo. Maybe it was written by a Jew. V'im timtzelomar hu kosvo. And even if you say that the idol worshipper wrote it, Shema Limko Yisrael Kosvo, Velolu Shema Vedis Kehovim. Maybe he wrote it for simple commercial purposes, to sell to Jews, and he didn't write it with idolatrous intent. So since we have a double suffix, that is sufficient reason for us to be lenient. The Tosfos he quotes Rashi at the top, but then he goes on to say that the more likely pshat in Tosfos's opinion is that a Sefer Torah found in the possession of a goy, if you had to choose who wrote it, it's much more likely that a Jew had written, and it's not the way of idol worshippers to write Sifrei Torahs. Let's continue in the Gemara. Sefer Torah shekosvoi oivei kichavim, a Sefer Torah that was written by an idol worshipper. Toni chado, what we're going to see in the next couple lines, we're going to have three Tanaic sources. On the side of the Gemara, we should point out, we have a mivneh, a structural note, Aleph through Gimel, are Gimel Brises, Shenira Yisoyser, Zura Zubinyan, Sefer Torah shekosvoi akum, three brief Tanaic sources that seem to contradict one another regarding how to deal with a Sefer Torah written by an idol worshipper. The triangles that follow are Yishuv, the resolution, the Brises, the Leel of these contradictory sources. So we continue in the Gemara. Toni Chado, we see the Aleph. Toni Chado, you saw if one source says that a Sefer Torah written by an idol worshipper is to be burnt. V'tani idach igonez, the other source says it's buried. V'tani idach korinbo, third source says you can read from it. Lo kashya, these sources aren't contradictory. Ha desanya yisorev, the first source, Rebbe Lozer, that's in accordance with a unique Tanaic opinion, the opinion of Rebbe Lozer. The assumed mindset of an idol worshiper regarding his actions is assumed to be for the sake of his idol. So, naturally, if you accept Rebbe Lozer's approach, a Sefer Torah that was written by the idol worshiper was written with idolatrous intent. V'ha desanya yigones, the second source, hai tanahu, it's the following Tanaic opinion. The Tani Rav Amnuna Brei, the Rava Mipashunya. Sefer Torah Tfilim is a shekosvan, Mosur, Oivikachom V'Yavid Isha Kotten, the Kusi V'Yisrael Mumar. There's a whole list of different people who call them disqualified people. Included in the list is what we dashed underline, an Oivet Kichavim, an idol worshiper. So a Sefer Torah or Tfilin or Mezuzahs. The Tfilin and Mezuzahs have pieces of parchment encapsulated in them that have sections of the Torah written on them. So if it was written by any of these people, including an idol worshiper, psulin, they are unfit. Shinemar, ukshartem, uchsavtom. These are two words from the Kriya Shema. And we, ukshartem is a reference to the mitzvah of binding tefillin upon oneself. And uchsavtom is a reference to writing. In the case of the Kriya Shema, it talks about writing the mezuzahs. But we expand on that here. Kol sheyeshno b'kshir yeshno b'ksiva. He was commanded in the mitzvah of tefillin, is commanded in the writing of the holy works. V'chol sheino b'kshira, eino b'kva. He was not included in the mitzvah of tefillin, and including the list of those that are not obligated in tefillin are idol worshippers. So eino b'ksiva, he is not included in the in being qualified for writing Sefer Torah tefillin or mezuzos. So since it's a Sefer Torah that's puzzle, well, how do you deal with it? You bury it. V'ha desanya karenbo, the third Tanaic source that said a Sefer Torah written by an idol worshiper can be used for reading. Hai tanahu desanya, it's in accordance with the following Tanaic opinion, which says loichin svarim min ha'edikavim b'chol mokim. You can purchase svarim, holy scrolls, from idol worshippers wherever. Ubilvad shiyu ksuvin kilchosin, provided they are written in accordance with the halacha, with the tradition and how to write these holy works. Umaisa b'vikavim echad b'tzidon she'akosev svarim v'hiter Reb Shimon Leo likach mimenu. And there was an incident. Tzidon is a place, a location north of the land of Israel, and there was an idol worshiper that was writing holy works, and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel allowed purchase from him. The Gemara asks a question. The question is presented here as a long question, but most of it is in brackets. The Gemara asks, for Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Ibud Lishmon boy, ksiva lishmon lo boy. We're going to see in the brackets a Tanaic source which provides the background information for this. But this is the main question. Reb Shimon Gamliel, how can he be so lenient? We know that he requires the tanning of the hides for producing the parchment upon which these holy works are written, needs to be tanned with mitzvah intent, lishmon, for their sake, with mitzvah intent. So you see that Reb Shimon Leo has a certain level of stringency in the preparation of these holy works. How could it be that all of a sudden, when it comes to their writing, that is he foregoes the lishma aspect? If anything, if you're going to require the tanning to be lishma, certainly you would require the writing to be done lishma for the sake of the mitzvah. And an idol worshiper is certainly not going to be doing it with that proper mindset. The Gemara will answer, if you skip the bracketed section, Omar Rabba Bar Shmuel Beger Shechozar Lesuro. It's the source is referring to a person that had converted, and he had gone back to his old ways, gone astray. A person who had converted to Judaism learned that you need to do it lishma, and then went back to his old ways, his old idolatrous ways. The main point, before we get into the text, main point is that the story in Sidon represented a unique situation where there was lishma in the writing. Once again, there was lishma because you're dealing with someone that had learned, that had discovered that you need to do it lishma. He is described here as an Oved Kohavim because he went back to his old ways of idolatry. The Gemara in the brackets, Desanya, and here we're bringing a Tanaic source that within which Rav Shimon Liel appears, indicating that you need to have the ibud, the tanning done lishma with proper mitzvah intent. Desanya, Tzipon Zov. This is a reference to tefillin that you covered with gold, Oshetola Aleim Orbe Matmea, or you covered the parchment that represents the heart of the tefillin, you covered it with skin, with leather from an unkosher variety animal. Or, and they're psulos, tefillin like that, if you used horse leather or donkey leather to cover the parchment of the tefillin, the tefillin are not kosher. Or behemotoro ksheros, gafapishalo ibdon lishmam, if you're using or the skin from kosher variety animals, and use that to create the boxes that contain the tefillin capsules. It's okay, as even if it wasn't tanned with mitzvah intent lishma. Reb Shimon Liel, whose name we dashed online because this is really why we're bringing in the source, he says, Oymer afilu or behemot torah psulos ad shiabdon lishman. Even if you're using kosher variety animal skins, that doesn't mean it's automatically acceptable until we know that you tanned them, you processed the skins lishma. So the question was, as we said, how could it be that Rav Shimon Liel would allow the purchase of Sforim from an Oved Kechavim in Sidon? Omar Rabo Bar Shmuel Beger Shechozar Lesuro. The story in Sidon involved a ger that went back to his idolatrous ways, and he knew that a Sefer Torah had to be written lishma, and that's what he did. Lesuro. Are you saying that he went back to his idolatrous ways? That's the story there in Sidon. Kol shekein dehavei lei min. Then all the more so, he's a super heretic, and it would certainly be unkosher. Omar Rav Ashi shechozer lesuro mishum yira. He went back to idolatrous ways, not because his heart was with him, but rather he was fear struck that the Gentiles would kill him if they saw that he was a proper convert to Judaism. So he practiced idolatrous ways out of fear, and therefore we can rely on his having written the Sforim lishma, and hence Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed their purchase. Tonu Rabbanan Malin B'dmeim Ad Kidei Tarpeik. Malin means to raise. You can pay more. How much more? A tarpik. My tarpik. How much more is that? What is a tarpik? Rav Amar Rav Sheshes Istira. Istira is a known coin. Rashi gives more background to it, but it's what we would call a half dinar. So you can pay a little more for the Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs that you're buying from the Goy. Hahi Tayasa, there was an Arab woman, the Aisi Chaisa, the Tefili, Likame, the Baye. She brought a small bag full of Tefillin. Omar Lo, Abaye said to the Arab woman, Yavisli Resh Resh Betamri. Give me pair by pair. Resh Resh means pair by pair of tefillin, and I'll pay you for each pair a date. Imla Zihara, she became enraged. Imla is filled with Zihara, with wrath. That's all she's being offered, a date per pair. Shaklo, she took the bag of tefillin, Shadisinu Benar, and threw it into the river. Of course, ruining the tefillin. Omar Abaye saw this and he said, Lo Iboy Lilizilzilinu Ba'apo Kulihai. I shouldn't have been so cheap regarding what I was willing to pay for them to her. So Abaye accepted upon himself responsibility for her action. The Mishnah. We glance at the side. We have a nosei klali, a general topic heading. We also indicate that this discussion continues till daf mem vov amud beis. Matzavim shel gerushin, situations where divorce appears. Shelo yachsir es grushoso oylomis, where the husband is prohibited from taking back his wife that he divorced, prohibited permanently. Kagon shigiresh mishum nidorim, shame ra. Two examples that we see here. There are the two examples here involve a person divorced his wife because of vows or because of a bad reputation, a shame ra. The Mishnah on Mem Vav Amud Beis introduces a case of a woman divorced because she was found to be an islandess, a woman who didn't mature physically in a normal way, and hence being incapable of procreation. Regarding that, we'll see a Machlokas Tanoim, whether he can take her back if he divorces her on those grounds. The Mishnah. Hamoitzi es ishto, a person who divorced his wife, mishum shem ra, lo yachsir. If he divorced her because of a bad reputation that was being spread concerning her morality, he is not to remarry her, to take her back. Mishum neder lo yachsir. If it's a woman that had taken vows, and the husband says, I can't live with a vowing woman, and on those grounds he divorced her, he is not to take her back. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol neder she yodu bo rabim lo yachsir. If it's a vow that she vowed in public. So that kind of woman who had vowed publicly is not to be taken back. Vishelo yodu borabim, if she's a woman that might be loose with vowing, but not in public, yachsir. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the husband can take her back. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Lo yachsir, v'afilu nimtsu dvorim badoyim, o haneder itiru chocham. When we say he's not to remarry her, if it's a case of a shame ra, he is not to remarry her, even if it turns out that it was false, they were false rumors about her morality. Or even if her vow was rescinded by a sage. V'taymo, and the reason for his not being allowed to take her back, pligi bo amoroi, there is an Amoraic disagreement regarding the reason. Iko lemandomar mishum kilkula, the iko lemandomar knas hushalibnesisra prutsas barayas minadorim. one opinion says, because if we would leave the possibility open of his taking her back, we will, you'll discover that he could end up messing her up. What do we mean by messing her up? Without getting into the detailed explanation right now, but it has to do with a case where the woman was divorced based on her having vowed. In the meantime, she remarries a second husband, produces children from her second husband, and the first husband could end up, we'll say, annulling the get if he knows that there would be a chance of his taking her back. There's another approach that says that it's a knas, it's a stringency imposed on women so that they should not be so loose with their morality nor vows. Rabbi Yehuda made a distinction between vows taken in public versus those that were not. Rashi, lo yafsir, that had, you see a star in the Rashi, those kind of vows that were done in public, the ein lo hafora, those kind of vows cannot be rescinded. Rabbi Yehuda, lo chayesh l'kukula, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned, he's not worried about the husband messing her up, her first husband messing her up, after she marries a second husband. Elo, what's Rabbi Yehuda's concern? Shlo yibnos Yisrael prusas b'nedarim, that Jewish women should not be loose with regard to vows. Hilkochi notru neder barabim, if she vowed in public, pritzesu b'nedarim, that's considered pritzes. Pritzes is too loose a behavior, and therefore we impose this restriction. However, shelo yodu barabim, the yesh la forum, a vow that's taken in private, is subject to voidance, lo consua. So those kind of vows, they did not impose their stringency. We go back to the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, he also, along with the other deos in the Mishnah, addressed the issue of vows. Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Meir Omer kol neder shetzorich chakiras chochom lo yachzir. Those kind of vows that, in order to absolve them, need a sage to intervene. So that kind of vow is the represents the situation that if a husband divorces the wife because of her vows, he is not to take her back. However, those kind of vows that the husband himself could have absolved, she made vows like that, the husband can take her back. Rashi explains. Let's look at Rashi together at the second to last narrow line, lo yachzir. The Rabbi Meir Sofar, taimo mishum kilkula. The reason for this stringency is because of the potential of the husband messing her up when she marries a second husband and produces children. Hilkoch, neder she'eno yochula hofer, avul chochom yochula hatir, a vow that the husband would not be able to annul, but a sage would be capable of absolving. The husband could ruin the divorce after she remarries a second husband and say as follows, had I known that a sage could absolve vows, lo hoyisi magarsha, I would not have divorced her. So we tell him, the husband, listen, if you're divorcing your wife because of a vow, then let it be known you will never be allowed to remarry her. And if he divorces her anyway, then we won't believe him when he says, had I known this and this and this, I would never have divorced her. because you knew before you divorced her that you'll never be able to take her back. Let's continue in the Rashi. That type of vow that the husband would have been able to annul. Here the Chachamim didn't have to impose the stringency prohibiting him to take her back. He wouldn't be able to mess her up under these circumstances and claim, Ilu Hoyisi Odea, had I known that I could have absolved the vow, it's a neder that was available to him to annul, and he didn't bother annulling it. So, if he tells us the story, had I known that I could have been mefer, but you knew you could have been mefer, and you didn't bother doing it, and you divorced her anyway, so we're not fearful of his coming and messing her up in the event that she remarries a second husband. And therefore, as long as she hasn't remarried a second husband, he is allowed to take her back. Let's continue in the Gemara, in the Mishnah. Amar Belozer, lo osru ze elo mipnei ze. He has a totally different approach, and almost an opposite approach. He says that the rabbis didn't prohibit the remarriage of the woman divorced because of vows that need chakiras chacham, except for the fact that we needed to impose our stringency and not taking her back regarding those kind of vows that in fact did not need the intervention of the chacham, but that the husband himself could have been mefer. Once again, we look to Rashi. Lo asru zeh shetzorach hakiras chacham lachsmer elubim nezeh she'enot tzorach. The betzorich, those kind of vows that actually needed the rabbinic intervention to absolve it, lo hoya lanu lachush lekilkol. We wouldn't have worried about the husband messing her up upon her second marriage. That means first husband messing up her second marriage. Lufi she'eno yochol lomar. He cannot say. He would not be believed to say. Had I known that a sage could absolve your vow, I would have opted for that and not divorced you. Why wouldn't we believe a claim like that? Danan Sadi, we bear witness. We know human nature. The Ain Odom Reutze Shitizbazi Ishta Bebezin Bifne Chochom Lelech Lebezdino Velishal Al Nidra. A normal husband would never have wanted his wife to be subjected to the degradation of appearing in front of a court to be in the presence of a sage that would have absolved her neder. Elo mipnei neder she'eino tzorech chacham u'bal yochol hafer osru es kulan. Only because of those kind of vows that a husband could have annulled, do we prohibit his taking back of the vowing wife regarding all kinds of vows. Shelo yomar, so that he shouldn't say, the husband, the first husband shouldn't say, Ilu ho'isi yodea sho'isi yochol ha'afir lo ho'isi megarshech. Had I known that I could have absolved the vow, I would never have divorced you. So as we said before, and we'll see this in the Gemara, a husband that divorces his wife based on vows that he could have been mefer, there is the fear that he would one day turn around and say, after she remarried a second husband, had I known that I could have been mefer, and I could have annulled your vow, I never would have divorced you. Now that is something, according to the this approach of Rebbe Lozer, we would have believed that. And therefore, we preempt that by telling the husband before he divorces his wife, you should know, if you're going to decide to divorce her based on vows, you'll never be allowed to take her back again. And Rebbe Lozer's main concern was with those kind of vows that the husband could have been mefer. Those vows that only a chacham could have been mefer, that doesn't concern Rebbe Lozer so much, because he would not have been believed to tell us the story of, had I known that a sage could have absolved the vows, I never would have divorced you, but I rather would have opted to take you to court to have him absolve the vow, to annul the vow. A husband is not believed to say that he would have done that, because he wouldn't have wanted his wife to be subjected to such disparagement. We continue in the Gemara, in the Mishnah. Omer Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa b'Tzidon, Be'echad Shomer Le'ishto. It was an incident in Tzidon where a man said to his wife, Konam im eini megarshech. Konam is an expression that the Gemara has to clarify, but in the final analysis, it has to do with a person accepts a vow upon himself if he doesn't divorce his wife. And he then divorced her, v'gersha, v'tiru lo chachom shech sirenot ne tikkun olam, and the chachomim allowed him to take her back because of tikkun olam, for the benefit of the public. That, this end of the Mishnah, from Rabbi Yossi Yehuda till the end, is something that's very unclear at this point, and the Gemara will deal with it. As we turn to the Gemara itself, we notice we have a nosei slash mivne heading on the side. Aleph and Beis appear in diamonds. They highlight shnei lishonis Rav Nachman, two versions of Rav Nachman, lahasbir tama Tanakama, to explain the reason behind the Tanakama. Lomo hamagarish mishum shemra or mishum neder lo yachzir. Why is it that someone who divorces his wife because of a bad reputation that she has with regard to morality, or because of vows, do we impose this restriction that he cannot take her back? The Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Bar Min Yumim Rav Nachman. Vehu she'omar lo mishum shemra ani motzieich. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Vov. Mishum neder ani motzieich. The Mishnah's teaching that he cannot take her back is applicable only to cases where at the time of the divorce he spelled out why he was divorcing her. I'm divorcing you because of the bad reputation that you have developed. Or I'm divorcing you because of vows that you make. Had he not said that, had he simply divorced her, he would have been able to take her back. Kosovar taimo mai mishum kilkula. Note the use of the diamonds. They are to highlight the reasons for each lashon. So the reason or the explanation is because of kilkula, messing her up. How does that mess up take place? So we have already explained that in the event that she marries a second husband and the first husband comes forth and says, oh, had I known this, had I known that, I would never have divorced you, that's tantamount to an annulment of the divorce. So what's she doing with a second man if she wasn't really divorced from the first man? So we preempt that by saying to the husband who's divorcing her, listen, you're not going to be able to take her back. And all of this is because we know why he divorced her. We turn to the Rashi. Actually, before we read the Rashi, let's go over the Gemara again from the top. Kosovar taimo mai, the Tanakama holds the reason for the stringency, the restriction of not being allowed to take her back, mishum kilkula, because of the potential mess up, messing her up, ruining her second marriage. E omar lo hachi, if the first husband had announced, had said thusly, that he's divorcing her because of the bad reputation, because of the vows, matzi mekalkula, he could mess her up then. The Elo, if he remained silent, he didn't explain to us why he was divorcing her. lo motzi makakalo, then he can't mess her up. We now go through the Rashi on this piece of Gemara. On the second line from the top, Taimo the Masnisin, the reason behind the Mishnah, Mishum Kilkula. Shelo yikalkaleno al bailo liacher shetinosi liacher. We don't want the first husband to ruin her marriage to the second husband. Viomar, and say the following six lines. Ilu hoyisi odea shehadvorim badoyin. Had I known that the reputation of ill repute is a lie. Oh, shehaneder yeshlo hafora, or the vow was subject to annulment. Afilu hoyu noislim meya mona lo hoyisi megarshech. Even had they given me 100 mona, a lot of money, I would never have divorced you. And I even said at the time of the divorce, that it was because of this that I'm divorcing you, because of the reputation, because of the vows. And when I divorced you, I had in mind to take you back if these things turn out to be false. Now, if he would say all of that, v'nimtza get botel, that would in effect annul the divorce. Ubonem and Hashem Mamzerim, and the children she would have born in the meantime from the second husband would be then illegitimate, because the divorce was annulled. She's still married to the first man. Lefikach oimrim lo kedim gerusha. Therefore, we tell him before he divorces her, Heve yodea, you should know, shelo tachzirena oilamis. You're not going to be taking her back ever. Well, once we tell him that, he's going to think it out very well whether he really wants to divorce her or not. Because once he knows that he won't be able to take her back, even if it turns out to be a bad reputation based on a lie, or that the Nedorim were subject to annulment, the Rashi goes on, v'shuveinu ne'emon lomar kein. He won't be believed anymore to say, had I known this and this. Shekevon shiyada shalsu la'avzira. Once he knows that it's forbidden for him to take her back under all circumstances, afilu lo tinosei la'acher, even if she doesn't marry someone else, v'lo chosh la'hamtin v'livdok achar advorim. And that husband, first husband, didn't check out the matters. He didn't check out the reputation, whether it's really true or not. He didn't check out the laws of vow annulment and divorced her anyway. Ilo v'daitu, he's revealing to us, shelo hoisa chaviva lova. She really was not so beloved unto him to begin with. The Rashi continues, v'ilo, and if we don't tell him ahead of time, you should know that that's if he didn't tell us, if the husband did not tell us why he is divorcing her, because of the reputation, because of the vows, lo motzi makakalo, he wouldn't be able to mess her up. Sharei lo omar shemotzia mishum shemra. When he divorced her, he didn't tell us that it was because of that that he was divorcing her. V'kevan de lo motzi makakalo mishanisei, since he, the husband, first husband, can't mess her up, he might have, what's he going to say after he divorced her silently, without revealing his reasons? He's going to tell us some kind of story about, oh, the vows bothered me and all that. Well, tell him, that's not why you divorced her. You divorced her for some other reason. So his story about his not having wanted to divorce her wouldn't be accepted. So there's no get annulment that the husband would be able to create. Therefore, there's no fear of mamzerus coming to be. Lo asru lo lahachzira ad shelo nisei. Therefore, we don't restrict him from taking her back as long as she doesn't marry a second husband. Once a divorced woman marries a second husband, so first husband is not allowed to take her back for other reasons, because the Torah says thusly. We turn back to the Gemara. Ika Diamri. We're at the third line from the top of the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Bar Menumi Omar Rav Nachman. Tzorich Sheyoymar La, a husband who is divorcing based on vows, has to say Havei Yodas Shemishum Shemrani Motziach Mishum Nedran Mitzrach. Yeah, he has to spell out these reasons. I'm divorcing you because of the bad reputation, the moral issue, or I'm divorcing you because of your vows. And now this approach is dictating to the husband, you have to say that. Kosovar Taimo Mai, according to this version of Rav Nachman, what's the reason for the Tanakama saying you cannot take her back? Kadesh lo ibnos Yisrael prutzos barayasim nedorim. So as to prevent Jewish women from being loose with regard to their moral lifestyle and with regard to vow taking. Hilchuch tzorach lemeimar lohochi. Therefore, he has to announce this. I'm divorcing you because of your vows. I'm divorcing you because of your reputation of immorality. We look at Rashi. Kosovar Taimo, we have a star in the Rashi. The Tanakamo explains, according to this version, the Lo Yachzir, Taimo de Lo Yachzir Mishum Knasu. It's a stringency imposed on the women folk. Shelo Yu Benois Yisrael, that they shouldn't be loose. How do we see that, according to this? Because we're chastising the women through the husband's announcing, you should know, I'm divorcing you because of your having developed a bad reputation. That puts women on notice to be careful. Likewise with regard to Nedorim. Tanya Kalishna, Kama V'Tanya Kalishna Basra. We have brises that support these two versions, the Aleph version and the Beis version. Tanya Kalishna Kama. Omar Rabbi Meir, Mipnei Ma Omru Hamoitzi Es Ishto Mishum Shemra Lo Yachzir Mishum Neder Lo Yachzir. Why was it said that a man who divorces his wife because of a bad reputation or because of vows, he is not to take her back? Shema Teilech V'Tinosei Liachir. We're afraid of the following situation, that if we didn't impose this prohibition, she might marry a second husband, v'nimtzu dvorim badoyin, and the issue of her bad reputation would turn out to be a lie. And likewise, with regard to the vow, it would turn out that it could be absolved. The yomar, and the first husband would say, after she married a second man, Ilu hoyisi yodea shekein hu, had I known that the divorce was real on false pretenses, even had they given me 100 mona, which is a large amount of money, I would not have divorced her. And if he says that, the divorce that he offered her then is voided, and the children she has with the second husband in the meantime will turn out to be illegitimate. Lefikach oimrim lo, therefore we tell the first husband before the divorce, Haviyodea shamoitzias isha mishum shemra lo yafsir mishum neder lo yafsir. Let it be known that one who divorces on these grounds of bad reputation or vows, regardless of whether they're found out to be a lie or that the vows can be absolved, you're not going to be able to take her back. And once the husband is informed of that ahead of time, we're not going to then accept any stories afterwards, because he knew fully well he would never be allowed to take her back. So his story then of had I known, I wouldn't have divorced you. Yeah, but you knew ahead of time before you divorced her that you wouldn't be able to take her back. Why didn't you check out the matter? Why didn't you check out whether her reputation was really was legitimately ruined, or the vows could have been annulled? The fact that you didn't bother checking her out and divorced her anyway shows us that you had other things in your on mind. You really didn't like her, and therefore the story of his I would never have divorced you business wouldn't be believed. Tanya Kalishna Basra. Omar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, Mipnei Malon Ramotzias Yishto Mishum Shemra Liyasir Mishum Neder Liyasir. Why is that stringency imposed that he's not allowed to take her back? Shelo Yubnois Yisrael Prusas Brazadorim, so that women, Jewish women, should not be Prusas, should not be loose with regard to matters of morality nor vows. Lefikach Omrim Lo, therefore we tell the husband, and more law, tell your wife upon divorce. Aviyadas, Shemishum Shemra Ani Motziech, Umishum Neder Ani Motziech. You should know that I'm divorcing you because of the ill reputation that you've developed, or because of the vows that you take. And as we said before, that will serve notice to Jewish women in general to be careful with regard to these matters. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.